on y'all. AVII.org. So we got a bombshell from the Donald J. Trump New York court case. Now, you don't have to be the biggest fan of Donald J. Trump in the world to realize he's being politically persecuted. Anytime you got people running for office on the platform, hey, elect me and I'll get Donald Trump, you got a problem. Know what I'm saying? And you also don't have to hate Donald Trump to think, how does it make sense for a guy to pay off a porn star $130,000 if he didn't do anything? But what if I were to tell you that there has been bombshell testimony in the New York Donald Trump criminal case that makes it look like pretty strongly that he didn't have any idea about the payoff? Even if you're a huge Trump fan, you're probably going to be like, Doc, come on, man. Come on. For real? Seriously? He didn't know about a $130,000 payoff? Let me just tell you what's going on in the trial. Because apparently nobody else is. This is not the kind of thing ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, CNN, probably even Fox is going to be talking about. I haven't watched Fox in a long time, but I'm just saying. I'm just saying. Guy I've been following on Substack for a long time, who goes by Technofog, really gets in the nuts and bolts, the weeds, on things like this. So I got his column on week one of the Trump New York criminal case from last week, and then a column that just dropped today on week two. And there are going to be some surprises in this, whether you love them or you hate them. I'm just telling you. So a week ago, Technofog on Substack, and you can find him. You can go to Substack.com and type in Technofog, and you can get what I got. You don't have to pay anything. He says, today wrapped the first week of the State of New York versus Donald Trump. With the jury being finalized, both sides gave opening statements on Monday. That was Monday of last week. But again, it's breaking news because nobody else is telling you this. For background, Trump faces 34 counts of falsifying business records, a low-level felony. The charges relate to the $130,000 in so-called hush money paid to Stormy Daniels by Michael Cohen prior to the 2016 election. It's alleged that throughout 2017, in order to conceal the purpose of the payment to Daniels, that Donald Trump, quote, made and caused, unquote, falsified business records, invoices, check stubs, and ledgers that were, quote, kept and maintained by the Trump Organization, unquote. Before the opening statements of the prosecution and the defense, Judge Juan Merchan made some key rulings on the type of evidence and testimony that the state would be allowed to elicit, including, one, Trump's alleged violation of New York law by fraudulently misstating the value of his assets for an economic benefit. Two, Trump's alleged violation of court orders concerning statements about the law clerk in his property valuation case. Three, Trump's alleged defamation against E. Jean Carroll. And last but not least, number four, Trump's stipulation to the dissolution of the Donald J. Trump Foundation to resolve claims by the New York Attorney General that he engaged in repeated and willful self-dealing transactions. Okay, opening statements where both sides outline the facts they seek to prove at trial reveal that the state's focus on the conspiracy to commit election fraud was a basis to create the alleged falsified documents. According to the state, Donald Trump orchestrated a criminal scheme to corrupt the 2016 election. Then he covered up that criminal conspiracy by lying in his New York business records over and over and over again. The state argued that this so-called criminal scheme and criminal conspiracy was formed among Trump, Michael Cohen, and a guy named David Pecker, former CEO of American Media, AMI, that published the National Enquirer, to, quote, influence the presidential election by concealing negative information about Mr. Trump in order to help him get elected, unquote. This purported criminal conspiracy had three parts. First, an agreement with the National Enquirer to run positive coverage for Trump. Second, an agreement with the National Enquirer to attack Trump's opponents. Last but not least, the National Enquirer agreeing to act as eyes and ears for the Trump campaign in an effort to locate damaging information about Trump and help try to bury it to help Trump get elected. With respect to what the evidence would show, the state explained that the evidence would show that Cohen made a $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels just after the Access Hollywood tape leaked. Now, the Access Hollywood videotape that leaked while Donald Trump was running for president was from years earlier when he was talking to Jeb and George W. Bush's nephew, Billy Bush, about how he tended to approach women and what he could get away with because he's a famous person. And as he said, they just let you do it. I'm sorry, I can't be any more graphic than that, but you probably know what I'm talking about. So, again, with respect to what the evidence would show, the state explained that the evidence would show that Cohen made a $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels just after the Access Hollywood tape leaked. This payment was made with the express intent to silence Daniels, thus influencing the election. After the 2016 election, the state alleged that records were falsified to reimburse Cohen for this payment by way of legal retainers that didn't accurately reflect the work Cohen had done on behalf of Trump. The state of New York further alleged that Trump signed the checks that incorrectly documented Michael Cohen's work, thus proving Trump was part of the scheme to falsify records. Okay, opening statements, the defense. On behalf of President Trump, the defense hit back and challenged the assumptions and conclusions reached by the state. The non-disclosure agreement, NDA, with Stormy Daniels was not illegal. Attempting to influence an election is not improper. Here's the quote from the defense. There's nothing wrong with trying to influence an election. It's called democracy, unquote. The 34 pieces of paper referenced in the indictment, the ledgers, checks, etc., are not a crime. The alleged criminal conspiracy is immaterial. The state has not charged conspiracy, and there was nothing illegal about publishing or killing stories for a presidential candidate. The defense also provided factual context omitted by the state, which bolsters Trump's case. They explained the evidence will show that the checks issued to Michael Cohen were based on the description from Cohen's invoice. Trump Tower generated the checks, and Trump was not involved in that process. In fact, the witness who generated the checks never received instructions from Trump. The defense also sets its sights on the state's key witness, Michael Cohen, Trump's lawyer, struck at Cohen's credibility and motives by saying this. Unbeknownst to President Trump, in all the years that Michael Cohen worked for him, Mr. Cohen was also a criminal. Apart from his work for President Trump and the Trump companies, he cheated on his taxes. He lied to banks. He lied about side business he had with taxi medallions, among other things. He had been eventually disbarred as an attorney. He's a convicted felon, and he also is a convicted perjurer. he is an admitted liar, unquote. The defense also provided context to the anticipated testimony of Stormy Daniels. Quoting again, you will hear that in the weeks and months leading up to the 2016 election, she saw her chance to make a lot of money, $130,000, and it worked. She got an NDA, and Michael Cohen paid her that money. He did that in exchange for her silence, which of course didn't work. She didn't know anything. She doesn't know anything about the charged 34 counts in this case. Her testimony, while salacious, does not matter, unquote. All right, the state's first witness was David Pecker, the former chairman, president, and CEO of AMI, which published National Enquirer. Pecker has known Trump since the 1980s, and at a time, he considered Trump to be a friend. They also had a type of business relationship. Trump would feed Pecker stories, especially during Trump's time on the Apprentice and Celebrity Apprentice TV shows. And Pecker would inform Trump through Michael Cohen if there were any rumors or negative stories that could be published against Trump or his family. All right, the key meeting. In August 2015, Pecker attended a meeting at Trump Tower with Trump and Cohen where they asked what he and his magazines, quote, could do to help the campaign, unquote. Pecker was willing to help and agreed to, quote, run or publish positive stories about Mr. Trump, and I would publish negative stories about his opponents, unquote. Also, he told Trump, quote, I would be your eyes and ears, unquote, because Trump had a small campaign staff. If there were to be negative stories or women selling information about Trump, Pecker would notify Cohen so he could kill the story or purchase them so they wouldn't be published. Pecker describes this relationship as mutually beneficial because it would increase the newsstand sales of the National Enquirer, whose readership mostly supported Trump. The state walked Pecker through a number of stories National Enquirer ran that were favorable of Trump, as well as those that attacked Trump's opponents. Pecker revealed there were times that Cohen fed them stories and info such as the basis for this famous headline, Donald Trump blasts Ted Cruz's dad for photo with JFK assassin. All right. Next, the state also elicited testimony that Steve Bannon, whom they label as a co-conspirator, was part of the effort to influence the election. At that point, Trump's lawyers objected. Objection, Your Honor. This is the first we're hearing from the government about Stephen Bannon being an alleged co-conspirator in connection with a so-called conspiracy to influence the election. The state admitted that Bannon's conduct in and of itself might not be criminal, but maintained Bannon was very much a part of the criminal conspiracy. Now, how can you do that? How can you be part of a criminal conspiracy if your conduct in and of itself might not be criminal? And talk about a reach. Back to the article. We mentioned Pecker's testimony about Bannon because during a sidebar discussing the defense objections, the state said the primary crime that we have alleged is New York election law, section 17-152. And we'll have more on that here in just a moment. Pecker would also detail how he purchased the story of Carrie McDougal, a Playboy model who alleged a romantic relationship with Trump, to ensure McDougal kept quiet prior to the election. He did the same in purchasing the bogus story from a former Trump doorman who alleged Trump fathered a child with a housekeeper. David Pecker bought that story for $30,000 to benefit Trump, though he testified the story was 1,000% untrue. With respect to the story at the heart of this trial, the NDA was Stormy Daniels. Pecker didn't buy her story. Instead, he passed it along to Michael Cohen as the National Enquirer had already paid off two of Trump's accusers and the business risked an association with porn star Daniels. It would be Cohen who paid off Daniels. To preempt damaging testimony from being part of cross-examination, the state asked Pecker about his efforts to suppress damaging stories about Arnold Schwarzenegger in 1999. Prior to Arnold's run for California governor, he approached Pecker and asked him not to publish any negative stories. In response, Arnold agreed to continue to be the editor and spokesman for Pecker's fitness magazines. Pecker helped Arnold in the same way he helped Trump by purchasing damaging stories and informing Arnold of any accusations that were out there. As the state wrapped direct examination, they probed their witnesses' motives. Pecker explained he still considers Trump to be a friend and holds no ill will toward the former president. Now, on cross-examination, Trump's attorneys got David Pecker to admit that as part of his checkbook journalism, he would publish only about half of the stories he purchased. Sometimes the National Enquirer would use those stories as leverage against the celebrity, including getting interviews with a celebrity or using their likeness. Pecker would also admit that Trump drove sales and maximized profits from the National Enquirer, essentially getting him to admit that the deal to not run scandalous stories about Trump was also a business decision. Pecker's protection of Trump long predated the 2016 election. He would attempt to kill a negative story on Trump way back in 1996, 20 years earlier. This was not only part of his friendship with Trump, but because Trump fed Pecker information on The Apprentice and other content for the National Enquirer. In fact, David Pecker had similar relationships with other politicians and celebrities. And here we have a Q&A in the defense's cross-examination of David Pecker. Question. This relationship you had with President Trump, this mutually beneficial relationship, you had similar relationships with other people, right? Answer. I did. Question. And that included celebrities, right? Answer. Yes. Question. And you also had a relationship like this with other politicians, correct? Answer. Yes. One example elicited during direct examination was that of Arnold Schwarzenegger. During cross-examination, Pecker admitted to paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to suppress the stories of 30 or 40 women concerning Arnold. Pecker was never repaid and instead used that as leverage to get Arnold's blessing for his men's fitness magazine deals. David Pecker also purchased a story and photographs of Tiger Woods meeting a woman in the parking lot before Tiger Woods' cheating scandal. In return, Pecker wanted an interview and cover photo for Men's Fitness magazine. And in 2009, he killed a damaging story about an alleged affair involving Obama's former White House Chief of Staff, Rahm Emanuel. As Politico reported, David Pecker worked with Rahm Emanuel's brother, Ari, a number of times to buy stories about celebrities and suppress them, including actor Mark Wahlberg. Trump's lawyers also hit Pecker on his motives to cooperate with authorities. Pecker and AMI were granted immunity from prosecution, and as investigations were ramping up, there were discussions with another company to acquire the National Enquirer. Pecker admitted that if there were indictments, then AMI's value would have been reduced. Then we have witness testimony. Prosecutors then called Rona Gaff, who served as Trump's executive assistant and senior executive assistant at the Trump Organization for decades. Her testimony was relatively short. She maintained Trump's contacts, which included Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels. She observed Stormy Daniels at Trump Tower. She described Trump as being a good boss. Next, Gary Farrow was called as prosecution witness. Farrow formerly worked as an executive at First Republic Bank. That's the one the feds just closed, right? Yesterday? Farrow testified that Michael Cohen was his client. Farrow was able to authenticate emails concerning Michael Cohen, which included Cohen wanting to create an account for a new company, the shell company, which would issue the payment to Stormy Daniels. So that concludes the witness testimony for the week, and it brings us briefly to the issue we mentioned before, New York Law 17-152, which states, it's very short, it says, any two or more persons who conspire to promote or prevent the election of any person to a public office by unlawful means, and which conspiracy is acted upon by one or more of the parties thereto, shall be guilty of a misdemeanor. Now, under the state's theory, Trump violated this law in his attempt to silence damaging stories and in his attempt to enlist the National Enquirer to run stories about his opponents. The state admitted as much in their opening when they said Donald Trump organized a criminal scheme to corrupt the 2016 election. They're relying on the statute because the indictment charges Trump under New York Law 17-150, which has applied to Trump's so-called intent to defraud, includes an intent to commit another crime or to aid or conceal the commission thereof. For the state of New York, it's not just about inaccurate business records. The underlying crime is one which involves unquestionably legal acts. Non-disclosure agreements, they're legal. The purchase of stories, they're legal. And the publication of stories protected under the First Amendment, all of which apparently, according to the state of New York, somehow become illegal when an election is approaching. So that is week one of the Trump criminal court case in New York City. Coming straight up, we've got week two, and I got to tell you, if you're one of those people who's saying, hey, nobody pays a woman $130,000 for something he didn't do. I'm telling you, they present evidence that Trump didn't even know Cohen made the payment. And I'm like, really? That was not on my bingo card. Doesn't matter if you love him or you hate him. It's a bombshell. And I don't think anybody else is telling you about it. So one of the big things we do in the Doc Washburn Show is to tell you stuff you're not getting anywhere else. It's available, but nobody else is doing the digging, apparently. That's coming straight up on the Doc Washburn Show here on 101.1 The Answer. I want to talk about integrity for just a minute and find out who your friends are. When I was fired by a former employer, October 2021, because I wouldn't go along with a COVID vaccine mandate, I found out a lot about integrity and who my friends are. A buddy of mine contacted me, told me that Mitch Ward over at Red River Auto asked him if it would be all right if he gave Mitch my cell number. I said, sure. Next thing I knew, I was sitting down meeting with Mitch Ward, the owner of the Red River dealerships in Cabot, Malvern, Heber Springs, Wynn, Arkansas, all over the place. Mitch told me that not only did he want to advertise on my podcast, but when he found out I was fired for refusing to get the clot shot, he pulled all his advertising off those stations too. Man, that really got my attention. So when I was rear-ended a couple of months later on Colonel Glenn Road by a guy who didn't even tap his brakes, my car was completely totaled. Where do you think I was going to go to get my next car? That was easy. Red River. Check them out at redriverauto.com. Better yet, go see them at their lot in Cabot and tell them Doc Washburn sent you. redriverauto.com. Now, a few months ago, my wife and I found out our daughter had lost so much weight, she was down to just 94 pounds. She got nauseous no matter what she tried to eat. Had to quit work because she got dizzy just trying to stand up. Her doctor had told her, hey, you got a hiatal hernia. Go on home. Nothing we can do about it. I'm sorry. I told my wife if we didn't try to help her, she's going to die. So we took our daughter to see our friend Dr. J.R. Crabtree, Arkansas Upper Cervical Center, and boy, did he ever help her. And she stopped getting nauseous when she ate and started gaining weight, and she's back at work. What Dr. Crabtree does is the best-kept secret in American healthcare. Now, let me explain to you. Your skull weighs somewhere between 8 and 15 pounds. It rests on the top bone of your spinal column, the atlas, which only weighs 2 ounces. If that atlas bone gets out of alignment, your whole spinal column can get kinked up like a chain. When that happens, your central nervous system can't send out the signals to different parts of your body as God designed it to do. Dr. Crabtree takes x-rays of your head and neck to find out if your atlas is out of alignment. And if it is, he gets it back in alignment. And he saved our daughter's life. And he's helped so many people we know. To find out more, go to their website, turnmypoweron.com. Talk about integrity. I am so proud to have Colonel Conrad Reynolds and AVII as a sponsor of the Doc Washburn Show. AVII is the America Voter Integrity Initiative. And in Arkansas, we have a real problem with the way we vote. The touchscreen voting computers cannot be trusted. The cybersecurity experts and voting experts Congress calls on all agree that we need hand-marked paper ballots that are filled out in person at the local precinct. The experts also agree electronic tabulators cannot be blindly trusted to be accurate when counting our votes. They all agree there must be a hand count audit of all races before an election is certified. Why have the citizens of Arkansas never been asked if they wanted to use voting computers? Did you know a recent Rasmussen poll showed nearly 60% of all Arkansans want hand-marked paper ballots? To find out more about what you can do, visit AVII.org. Colonel Reynolds and AVII are working hard to restore trust, transparency, accountability, and accuracy to Arkansas elections. Remember to visit AVII.org. What a 101.1, The Answer. Doc Washburn. Doc Washburn Show brought to you by AVII.org. Check them out, y'all. We go back to Technofog on Substack. Trump on trial, week two. This just dropped today, moments ago. And he says, today wrapped the second week of the state's presentation of evidence in the people of the state of New York versus Donald J. Trump. Last week, the state introduced the alleged criminal scheme, which it argues served as the basis for the purportedly falsifying documents, the purchase of the story from Stormy Daniels soon before the 2016 election. This week continued that trend, but before the testimony resumed, Judge Juan Merchan held Trump in contempt for violating a court order which prohibited Trump from making extrajudicial statements against family members of the court. A district attorney, and various witnesses in the case. Trump was fined a total of $9,000, required to remove the offending posts from Truth Social, and prohibited Trump from making public statements about witnesses, the court, and the district attorney, and their family members and staff, and from making any public statement about the jurors. In his order, Judge Merchan threatened incarceration for further violations, saying, and I quote, defendant is hereby warned that the court will not tolerate continued willful violations of its lawful orders and that if necessary and appropriate under the circumstances, it will impose an incarceratory punishment, unquote. Now to the witnesses. Gary Farrow. It started with the continued testimony of Michael Cohen's former banker, Gary Farrow. It was through Farrow and his bank, First Republic, that Cohen paid the lawyer for Stormy Daniels. Prosecutors walked Farrow through the $131,000 wire transfer that took place after Michael Cohen established a shell corporation to be used to make the payment. Cohen wrote that the purpose of the wire transfer sent to Stormy Daniels' lawyer was for a, quote, retainer, unquote. The wire transfer was issued through Farrow. Cohen requested it be transferred from his home equity line of credit to the new LLC. Farrow testified that if he knew the true purpose of the bank account created for Michael Cohen's new LLC, the purchase of rights to a so-called media story on behalf of a political candidate that it would have undergone additional layers of scrutiny and possibly would have never been opened by the bank. Cross-examination. Trump's defense strategically used Farrow to attack Cohen, underscoring Cohen's deceit in opening the shell company to pay Stormy Daniels. For example, here's an exchange discussing how Cohen's lies helped avoid oversight by the bank. Defense attorney question. So if Mr. Cohen says he's opening a consulting business or a law firm, that wouldn't raise any red flags to you either? Answer, not at all. Question. And indeed, that's what he said he was doing, correct? Answer, that's correct. Farrell also admitted on cross-examination that Cohen's paperwork with the bank indicated that he was not acting as an agent for anyone. They also elicited a testimony from Farrell that, first of all, he never spoke with Cohen about Trump, and secondly, never spoke with Trump directly. Wow. At this point, I would think the state would be saying, uh-oh. Next witness, Keith Davidson. Perhaps the most consequential witness this week was Keith Davidson, California-based attorney for Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels, who profited from their hush money deals with AMI, National Enquirer, and Michael Cohen. Davidson was given immunity for his testimony before the grand jury. Immunity is granted as a matter of law in the state of New York for witnesses who testify in the grand jury. Davidson's history with Michael Cohen goes back to 2011, where a blog post alleged the Trump-Daniels affair. Daniels at the time was the client of Keith Davidson. After that story was published, Michael Cohen leveled a, quote, barrage of insults and insinuations and allegations. He was just screaming, unquote. Cohen was upset because he believed Daniels was the source of the story. Davidson would eventually send a cease and desist letter to the blog, which took down the story. There's some interest in shopping Stormy Daniels' story to the media during the 2016 election, but it was rather tepid until the Access Hollywood videotape was released. At that point, interest in her story spiked, and Davidson shopped the story around. An attempt to sell the story to AMI, National Enquirer, fell through, and, quote, AMI handed it off to Cohen, unquote, who would eventually purchase the story. Prosecution walked Davidson through the details of the NDA, identifying Daniels and Trump through their respective pseudonyms and explaining how it limited his client's ability to tell her alleged story. Davidson explained that after the NDA was signed, there was an issue with payment. And Michael Cohen's non-payment put the deal in jeopardy. Cohen would give various excuses for not paying the $131,000. Jewish holidays. Lack of wiring instructions, though Cohen had the instructions. Cohen also blamed Trump's campaign travel schedule, which took him to many different states, as a reason for the delayed payment. Davidson interpreted this to mean that Trump hadn't given his approval for the deal. As Davidson and his clients' frustrations grew, and as the NDA risked being blown up, Michael Cohen said with respect to the payment, and I quote, "I'll just do it myself," unquote. This is a significant statement, as it is Cohen's admission that Trump never gave him permission to make the $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels, and it also explains why Cohen had to establish a shell corporation and secure the funds through a home equity line of credit to finish the deal. Have you heard this before? Eventually, Michael Cohen was able to make the payment. The Stormy Daniels story was not released and Trump was elected. It's doubtful the Stormy Daniels allegations, if published, would have affected the election, but on election night, Davidson texted Dylan Howard, then editor of the National Enquirer, stating, "What have we done?" After the election, Michael Cohen would text Dylan Howard again at the National Enquirer that he didn't think he would ever be repaid the $130,000. Michael Cohen also became increasingly despondent, telling Davidson in December 2016, quote, "I can't believe I'm not going to Washington," unquote. Cohen grew frustrated at Trump for not repaying his so-called loyalty through a position in the White House and started to consider steps that would advance Michael Cohen's own personal goals. Cross-examination See, that all came out on the state's direct examination. The cross-examination of Keith Davidson, conducted by Trump attorney Emil Bove, was highly effective. The defense presented Davidson as an attorney whose business was to extort cash payments from celebrities in order to prevent the disclosure of embarrassing and salacious materials. Under cross-examination, Davidson admitted he never met or spoke with Donald Trump. He had no knowledge of the operations of the Trump Organization. This is corroborated by an April 2018 call recorded by Michael Cohen, where Davidson discussed his interactions with a reporter from the Wall Street Journal. And here's the quote. The $130,000, was there ever any indication that the money was coming from him? And I said, no. They said, was there ever any indication that Michael Cohen needed authority from Donald Trump before that payment? And I said, no, it was never discussed. They said, did you ever ask Michael Cohen what conversations he had with Donald Trump about this payment? I said, no. Unquote. So there you have it. Davidson further explained Michael Cohen's state of mind and disappointment in not getting a job in Trump's White House. Quote, I thought he was going to kill himself, unquote. Cohen's state of mind will be highly relevant in the weeks to come. Trump defense attorney Emil Bove spent a great deal of time walking Davidson through his various extortion schemes, many of which involved sex tapes. But before he got there, attorney Bove laid the foundation probing Davidson's knowledge of laws governing extortion. Here's Davidson's testimony. Question, what does extortion mean to you? Answer, to obtain property by threat of fear or force. Question, is it your belief that the statute of limitations on the crime of extortion has run? Answer, I have no opinion. Question, by 2016, you were pretty well versed in getting right up to the line without committing extortion, right? Answer, I don't understand the question. One of the celebrities shaken down by Davidson and his clients was called Tila Tequila, the 2000s internet sensation and reality star. During this questioning, Davidson's memory was conveniently shaky. When asked if he represented the sex tape broker who threatened to release Tila's sex tape if she didn't pay $75,000, Davidson answered, I don't recall. He also couldn't recall whether at the time of that transaction, if he was on a 90-day suspension by the California bar. I bet he knew. Davidson was also asked whether he represented a woman who leaked Lindsay Lohan's treatments, substance abuse treatment apparently, to TMZ for $10,000. Davidson gave the same answer, I don't recall. When asked whether he represented clients who extracted money from Charlie Sheen, Davidson answered, there was no extraction. Davidson admitted he was investigated by state and federal authorities for committing extortion against Hulk Hogan in relation to the wrestler's leaked sex tape, a fact which would have certainly caused a lawyer to further familiarize himself with the bounds of extortion laws. And in a conversation with Hogan's lawyers, which apparently took place during the extortion negotiations, Davidson said he represented clients with sex tapes of normal people, people with families who don't want to be outed as gay. Yet again, Davidson couldn't recall that conversation. Courtroom reporters with the New York Times had this to say about the cross-examination of Davidson. Quote, this is getting very hostile quickly, unquote. With respect to the effectiveness of Trump's defense team, the New York Times observed, quote, Bove is making him appear not like a truth teller, but like someone who is unethical. And Bove is increasingly headed toward the suggestion that the money to Stormy Daniels may not have been paid to cover up an affair with Daniels, but because Trump was being shaken down, unquote. New York Times is saying this? Wow. On that point of a shakedown, evidence was also introduced via a conversation with Michael Cohen that Davidson suggested he and his client might have a lot more leverage and might require another payment, supporting the defense theory that Trump was a victim of Davidson's plot. And here is the quoted text. Michael Cohen, you know what bothers me the most? Keith Davidson, no, hold on one second, hold on. Hypothetically, people think, hey, I need to settle this case, you know, the most. But before this date and certain, because that after that date, I have no more leverage. Well, if the things don't turn out the way that you thought they were going to turn out, and now you realize you have a lot more leverage, you try to settle it twice. Unquote. Also, part of the defense's evidence are these communications between Davidson and Michael Cohen, where Davidson accuses his former client, Stormy Daniels, and her new attorney, Michael Avenatti, of lying. Quoting again from the texting, Keith Davidson, Avenatti is lying his blank off, as you know, and I know it, and he knows, and Stormy's lying, right? Michael Cohen, are you speaking with Gina? Keith Davidson, on occasion, we spent a long time without speaking. You know, Gina brought Stormy to Avenatti, and we went a long time without speaking, and now that Avenatti has really driven a wedge, a serious wedge in between Stormy and Gina, Avenatti is leaning on Gina, saying, you know, basically, we know we're lying. We know we're full of blank in the media. We know that she was never threatened in Las Vegas. We know all these things, unquote. Next witness. Testimony of Hope Hicks began Friday morning. That's this morning, and will continue into next week. Her importance to the state's case might be overstated by the media. She was not a party to the alleged criminal conspiracy between AMI and the Trump campaign. Instead, she was an observer and party to the campaign's internal reactions and public responses to the Access Hollywood tape and the accusations from Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels. While this is salacious information for some, it's not exactly a smoking gun for the state of New York. Hope Hicks currently has no relationship with Trump. She last spoke with him 2 years ago during the 2016 campaign. She overheard a Trump's call with David Pecker, National Enquirer, discussing the magazine's articles about malpractice claims against Ben Carson. She described the responses within the campaign and was given texts from that time frame between herself and Michael Cohen to the various controversies as the election neared. For example, she explained the campaign's reaction to a Wall Street Journal story which alleged the Karen McDougal affair less than a week before the November 2016 election. Texts between her and Michael Cohen showed they both weren't terribly concerned about the story, that Trump should just push past the accusations. She also testified to learning of the Access Hollywood video from Washington Post reporter who requested comment. Consensus among the campaign advisors was that this was damaging. No surprise there. Trump wasn't as concerned, calling it locker room talk. Hope Hicks' response, apparently at Trump's direction, was, that doesn't sound like something he would say. As allegations of the Stormy Daniels affair festered, Hope Hicks stated Trump was concerned with how it was viewed by his wife and how it was playing with the campaign. That's an important point that both sides will focus on as the trial continues to develop. For the state, they need to allege the Stormy Daniels deal was all about the election. The defense will argue that the deal was done to protect his wife and young son, undercutting the state of New York's theory of the case. Hope Hicks spoke to Trump and Cohen about the Stormy Daniels payment in 2018 after it was reported by the Wall Street Journal. Michael Cohen denied making the payment. Trump said the payment was made to protect him from false allegation from the kindness of Michael Cohen's heart. What did Hope Hicks think of that? She didn't know Cohen to be an especially charitable person or selfless person, I'll bet. On cross-examination, Hope Hicks admitted Michael Cohen was never part of the campaign. He sometimes did some things that were unauthorized by the campaign. He sometimes went rogue. He frustrated the campaign staff. He did things that weren't helpful. Hope Hicks said Michael Cohen liked to call himself a fixer. Well, that was only because he had to fix what he had broken in the first place. She would also testify that there was nothing irregular about a campaign coordinating with the media. She agreed It's normal for a campaign to amplify positive press and attacks on opponents and to work with the press to do so. She agreed it was commonplace. Focusing on the Access Hollywood videotape, Hicks said Trump was worried about how this would be perceived at home. He respects Melania's opinions and was really concerned about her reaction. This was something that weighed on him. Finally, Hope Hicks testified to Trump's busy White House schedule early in his presidency. He was frequently multitasking and had frequent interruptions. We note that this is another point the defense will focus on. Trump's busy schedule and competing interests as president, meaning anything having to do with Michael Cohen, would be an afterthought. The state called two other witnesses this week, Douglas Doss and Georgia Longstreet. Both were called to admit evidence. Douglas Doss worked with the DA's office. He extracted data from Michael Cohen's cell phones. The state played audio of a number of recordings made by Michael Cohen, including a conversation with Trump where he stated, and I quote, "I need to open up a company for the transfer of all that info regarding our friend David, National Enquirer." In response to Cohen's discussion of financing the deal, Trump responded, "What financing?" On cross-examination, Douglas Doss admitted that there were some issues with how Michael Cohen's phone was handled, as they had been synced multiple times and reset the factory settings, apparently while Michael Cohen still had the phones. We note that the evidence from the phone relies on the credibility of Michael Cohen, who very well may have deleted other evidence that was more incriminatory, or that which doesn't support Michael Cohen's ever-changing story. Georgia Longstreet is a paralegal with the district attorney's office. She was used to admit social media posts of Trump and his associates, including Trump's Twitter response to the Access Hollywood videotape when it came out in 2016, Trump's denial of the alleged affairs, and his Truth Social post that said, in all caps, "If you go after me, I'm coming for you." During her cross-examination, Ms. Longstreet admitted she had no independent knowledge of who wrote the posts or why they were written. So at this point, winding down, Technofog on his Substack asks, what will follow? Well, the state is asking Judge Merchan to hold Trump in contempt again for his social media posts. Judge Merchan seemed a bit reluctant to accept all of the state's arguments, though there's the potential for fines against Trump and orders to remove the offending social media posts. Imprisonment for the posts, if Judge Merchan finds them to be in violation of his order, seems unlikely. There's also the issue of whether prosecutors can question Trump about his social media posts, the ones that Judge Merchan ordered removed, should Trump testify in his defense. Just this afternoon, Judge Merchan denied the prosecutor's request, saying it would be too prejudicial. In sum, not a bad week for Trump. The state has yet to directly tie Trump to the allegedly falsified records, something that Michael Cohen will probably testify to. In the meantime, they're taking every opportunity to present Michael Cohen's dishonesty to the jury. It sounds like that would not be in their best interest to me. I mean, he's like their star witness, and they're like, yeah, the bum's a liar. Who testifies next? Potentially, members of Trump's campaign or presidential staff or former employees of the Trump Organization. The state still has to present evidence on how the payments to Michael Cohen were issued through Trump's business And we still haven't heard from Stormy Daniels or Michael Cohen. But I'll tell you what, and that's the end of it. Again, that's Technofog over at Substack. But I'll tell you what, in my humble opinion, the Trump defense has really punctured the state's case by showing, I mean, without a shadow of a doubt, that Trump didn't know that Michael Cohen was going to pay Stormy Daniels. I mean, the evidence is clear. I just don't know if anybody told you that. All right, now we got breaking news here. Washington Examiner, Trump and RNC sue Nevada over mail ballot deadline. Clearly violates federal law. So you might want to take a look at that over the weekend. Also, something else you want to take a look at, my friend Jay Greeland, Arkansas Monitor over on Substack, he's probably going to have more breaking news about the dearly departed Brian Malinowski, who was executive director of Little Rock Airport, who, in my humble opinion, was the victim of a mob hit when the ATF murdered him. So that's coming up. Speaking of coming up, shouldn't we be playing some music right about now? Shouldn't we be playing some music right about now? Okay, that sounds good. I'm Doc Washburn. See you Tuesday at 6:06, 101.1, The Answer.